This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
Let's take a look at some of the testimony in the trial of Karen Reed from the defense. One of the big points that they're making is, you know, geographic geodata based on his cell phone and the Apple Health data. Let's take a look at some of that. There we go.
On his phone, and that represents a huge problem for the Commonwealth. It shows that he took 80 steps and ascended or descended three flights of stairs at that time. And that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? It matches. Walks into the house, goes directly to the basement. There's your 80 steps, and you're descending flights of stairs. The big problem for the Commonwealth is he wasn't outside at the car ascending and descending stairs. Wasn't climbing on top of the car. So they'll tell you, wait, don't look at the Apple Health data. Look at this other thing called Waze. But Rick Green explained that if you apply the 3-minute offset that is built into that monatomic time, it aligns perfectly. They don't want you to see that. They don't want you to pay attention. They want you to look the other way. But even more importantly, at approximately 12:32 a.m., someone holding John's phone takes another 36 steps and travels 25 meters. Why is that so important? Because by 12:32 a.m., Karen Reed was gone. She had already left the location. She left at 12:30. Trooper Guarino told you that Karen Reed's phone connected to John's Wi-Fi at what time? 12:36. It is undisputed in this case that it's a 6-minute drive on a good day from 34 Fairview over to One Meadows. She was gone by 12:30, and John's phone was taking 36 steps and logging 25 meters at 12:32 after she'd left. So don't be fooled. John walked into that house, after which Karen drove away, and the scientific data all prove it.
So how powerful is that? Because if you look at John being outside, stumbling around, I could see those many steps being taken. The staircase, that's a little bit more of a question. I can say that between an Apple Watch and an actual phone, their accuracy varies. I would say the phone is a bit less accurate from my experience, especially in terms of climbing stairs and things of that nature. Again, I've seen it be fallible just in normal life, but it does represent some movement. Something was going on there, but why could that not have just been John out in the cold?
To me, it again, these jurors are either buying that there's a conspiracy or they're not. And that's the bottom line. If they think that there's a conspiracy, then they're going to think that that's powerful evidence. If they don't think that there's a conspiracy, they're going to think it's bullshit. Simple. Like, you know what I mean? It's like the weight that you give that is basically person to person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like an overall weight, like, oh man, that's really powerful evidence overall. It's going to be powerful depending on which narrative that you've dug yourself into.
Yeah.
If you think that the conspiracy thing is utter bullshit, then they're not buying any of it.
Yeah.
They're thinking what you're thinking. Like, oh, you know, I take my dog for walks all the time. And then, you know, I've driven him to a dog park. And sometimes my phone is calculating my steps, even though I'm really driving. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the phone, it's not infallible. It makes mistakes. Like I've had it. Sometimes it counts like a drive a step. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not like it's not set in stone. Like it's technology that doesn't have issues. So, you know, but again, and if you're of the mindset that something went down in that house, you're going to find it to be compelling, you know? So, I mean, in terms of it being that type of evidence that's indisputable, it's just not that.
It's not. I mean, obviously, defense is going to present it as being, you know, scientific, factual data. That's your job to do that. But in reality, it's a fallible piece of evidence. It's not like, here's DNA on a knife. You can't dispute that there's DNA on this knife. It is not a perfect tool. Let's watch one more clip here. This is Jackson, and one of the big keys that they're arguing is all about the taillights. Let's watch this.
And don't forget, Buchanek is Proctor's supervisor, and he was in that little group chat where Karen Reed's naked photos were being searched for. You know the saying about the apple falling from the tree. Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't even started talking about the taillight yet. You'll recall that at the very beginning of this case, you were introduced to no fewer than 5 CPD officers very early on who searched the scene. None of them, not a single one, found any taillight material at the scene. Zero. Steven Seraph, Sean Good, Stephen Mullaney, Michael Lank, Paul Gallagher, they were all there. They were all walking right around there. They were all looking. They were searching with their eyes. They were searching with their hands. Some said they were searching with their feet. They even used tools, a leaf blower. Not one piece of bright red taillight material was at the scene. Not a single piece. But incredibly, over the course of the next 3 weeks, according to Michael Proctor, 47 pieces of taillight material would end up being found, some of which were the size of a salad plate. The CERT team shows up later on January 29th, and according to O'Hara, the first few pieces of taillight were found about 5:45. And here's some interesting testimony that you heard. Who else was there? Who did O'Hara say was there? Well, he said his team was there. We certainly expected that, but then he said there were others. These other mysterious figures, some from Canton PD, some from the Massachusetts State Police, that he could not account for. Heavy coats, big masks, hats. Even Lieutenant O'Hara could not tell who was who, but he did note Canton police officers were there who were unaccounted for. Massachusetts state troopers were there unaccounted for. And during that search that was overseen by Trooper Tully, Proctor's supervisor, 3 pieces of taillight material were found. That's super important, and I want to concentrate on that for a second. O'Hara said all 3 pieces were in an area about 12 inches square. That's an area about as big as your dinner plate. Tully, however, claimed that one red piece was found about 3 feet away from that was a shoe. About 1 to 2 feet from that was a clear piece of plastic, and a few feet away from that was a red piece of plastic. So we have red, clear, and red over the span of about, added up, probably 10 or 12 feet. Ladies and gentlemen, both of those things cannot be true. Somebody is taking liberties with the facts.
It's another piece, probably exactly what you just said before. If you believe it, you believe it. If you don't, you don't. And that's where that jury sits. I'm curious to see what that split is too. If it's a 50-50
split. I'm dying
to
know. Yeah. Like I would kill to know. Cause it's like, again, if you've got like a 10-2, 11-1 split, then it's worth them to continue to deliberate. If it's 6-6, there is no way in hell that they're ever coming to it. Like, I'm telling you, it's mirroring what we see on Twitter. It's mirroring what we see on social media. And does anybody seem like they're changing their position on this shit at all to you?
It reminds me of an election. It mirrors that perfectly, because that's really what a lot of this has felt like. This has not felt like a trial. It has felt like people ingrained in their political camps, even though it's not talking politics, but they have their belief and nothing is going to change it no matter what.
Super astute observation. That's exactly what it's like. It's evidence be damned, because quite frankly, to me, the most powerful evidence in the entire case was the fact that they had these 2 independent guys that had no horse in the race, man, no dog in the hunt. They were hired by neither side. They were available to both sides, and they're incredibly educated, and they're at the top of their field, and they're, to me, unimpeachable experts. And they both came out and said, look, like, we did the testing, you know, she wasn't hit by a motor vehicle. I'm telling you that, the guy works for ARCA. Dr. Wolf works for ARCA. To me, that was enough when you had, like, for reasonable doubt, you know what I'm saying? And it's like going into it, like, my criticisms of Jackson's closings were, you know, look, he was incredibly well-spoken. had clearly practiced it. It was timed perfectly. Whereas in contrast, you see Lally running out of time. He doesn't even get to make his, you know, his plea for conviction at the end of it because he wasn't budgeting his time properly. You know, but aside from that, I was of the mindset, and I was talking to Allie, my wife, who's also a criminal defense attorney. I'm like, look, I'm not leaning into the conspiracy thing. I don't need to anymore. No. I have Dr. Scorti Bello, their ME, saying undetermined, and that she cannot say within a reasonable degree of medical certainty that this was caused by a motor vehicle accident or a pedestrian strike. Like that's huge.
Yeah.
And then when you factor in, like, I'm not even having to mention like Trooper Paul, like that guy speaks for himself, that like his entire testimony was nonsense.
Yeah.
And then you've got this situation where you've got these two witnesses, man, that were so powerful to me. It's just, it screams reasonable doubt. Like, I don't know how, unless you're just dug in, like you're talking about, like this is a political type like thing in people's minds where they don't give a shit about the evidence and what it's showing, how you're not at least at reasonable doubt. You know, it's like you've just like grown so accustomed to thinking that she's guilty, and you're so dug into that position that you refuse to admit that the case has not been proven beyond a reasonable doubt by the Commonwealth. And that is the law.
Yeah.
Like you, what your feelings don't matter.
Yeah.
Like what you think in your heart doesn't matter. All you can do is go by the law. So, I mean, man, it's a crazy.
If there's any case with reasonable doubt as a high profile case in recent memory, this is it. I mean, reasonable person, there is reasonable doubt. Again, take feelings out of it. I mean, for the longest time, I did kind of think, well, she must have hit him, just didn't realize it. Maybe she did. I don't know. Like, I know the expert said, but it's reasonable doubt. If I was in that jury, I would have to go with not guilty because there's too much reasonable doubt.
And Tony, like the pneumatic cannon thing with Dr. Crash or whatever, like all the ladies thought he was super attractive. They came up with a name. I forget what it is, like Crash Daddy, you know? So like when Crash Daddy comes out and talks about the concept of the glass being thrown by John with, you know, if she is coming back in reverse at 24 miles an hour, and he's got a Tom Collins glass, which, you know, has the thick bottom and he whips it. Like my daughter was just at a ball game, and they have the radar gun. My 12-year-old daughter throws him 40 miles an hour. So it is not beyond the scope of reason to think that John, if he whips the glass and you've got like a bat and ball type scenario with the physics of it, that taillight would have shattered. I mean, he said in our testing, it shattered. It takes like, and for Jackson to have decided, I'm going to lean into the conspiracy when I had this guy, this independent witness, who basically gave an alternate explanation as to how that taillight got there. Mm-hmm. And then you got Lucky coming down and plowing. Yeah. And that would explain how the taillight that may have been cracked by John throwing the glass at the taillight because he's pissed off. And she's like either speeding away or speeding toward him, whatever the case may be. It was another explanation. Yeah. And it was just like you're asking a huge, huge amount of a jury to buy into the conspiracy thing. And that, like, that was my biggest criticism. Allison and I were like, I don't even know if I would have touched it.
Yeah.
Like you didn't prove it, and they don't have any burden to prove jack shit as the defense. But if you say something like that, a jury is going to expect some evidence that it happened. And, you know, and it was just a lot of inference, tons of inferences. You have to make all these inferences. Well, you know, why is he destroying his phone? Like, why are they calling each other? Why all the butt dials? Why is she calling? Like, you have to, like, all these inferences aren't necessarily proof. I mean, they're circumstantial, but they're certainly not smoking gun evidence that John went into that house.
So, no, I don't know. It certainly created doubt, more doubt 100%. On top of already doubt. And that was their goal. Just doubt here, doubt there, a little doubt over here. Let's add some doubt there. And boom, this is where we're at.
All doubted out.
Yeah, they're all doubted out.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see when we get a verdict what exactly we have, and maybe we'll have one by the time you all are watching or listening to this. But we'll do a recap of all that in the following week once we have it, if we have a actual verdict. Who knows?
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.